Ms. Rosenblatt, Ms. Harris, Donnelly versus Commonwealth. Morning, ladies.
Morning, Your Honor.
Rosenblatt, you have 15 minutes. Do you want to reserve any rebuttal?
5 minutes, please, Your Honor.
All right, you may proceed.
Thank you, sir. Good morning. My name is Barbara Rosenblatt. I'm with the Newport News Public Defender's Office, and I'm here representing Mr. Nunnally today. I'd like to address the issue of the conspiracy to obstruct justice. First, I'd like to state the conspiracy itself is an agreement between two parties for some action to commit an offense. And in this case, the offense was obstruction of justice, which requires the threat of bodily harm or force to impede the witness or the administration of justice in some way.
Is the bottom line in this case whether the appellant agreed or encouraged any threats to this potential witness?
Not just agreed or encouraged, Your Honor, but if there was anything that showed he took any sort of participation in the action itself. There needs to be an agreement which needs to show that Mr. Nunnally participated and he showed that this was something he wanted done and that he was going to take some sort of action to help this occur. The situations the Commonwealth mentions are phone conversations between Mr. Nunnally and Mr. Dooley. The first conversation they deal with is where Mr. Nunnally states that there needs to be pressure placed on her. But it's unclear what pressure is. That does not need to be a threat. It does not need to be a force. It can be many different things. He also isn't clear in terms of what specifically needs to be done and for what reason.
We don't isolate particular facts. We look at all of the facts together.
That is correct, Your Honor. And the next fact that deals with Ms. McDonald is when they're talking about the $500 and the fact that they offered her money in terms for her not to come to court and not to testify. Now, and in this conversation with Mr. Dooley and Ms. McDonald, there was clearly no threat to her or force to her if she felt comfortable enough to come back to him and say, I want $500. If she had felt any sort of threat or force, then she wouldn't have been in that comfortable situation to tell him what she required in order to get the money. So we're looking at the facts in terms of pressure. What type of pressure? What's that even dealing with? To the fact that when there was any sort of contact with Ms. McDonald, she felt comfortable to lead the conversation and to say, this is what I want and this is how it needs to go. Now, after that, the Commonwealth deals with a second conversation where Mr. Dooley is the only one that's making any sort of comment in terms of any sort of threat of bodily injury or any sort of force. Mr. Nunnally at no time agrees to this, encourages it, states anything that says this is the way it should go and this is how we should act.
Does an individual have to expressly assent to a suggestion of use of violence in order to create an agreement between the two?
Your Honor, there needs to be something to show some sort of agreement. And in this case, when Mr. Dooley makes that comment, Mr. Nunnally immediately changes the subject and begins to talk about something else.
What about adoptive admission?
Your Honor, in this case, he needs to maybe hesitate and think about it, but he doesn't do that in any situation. He continues the conversation. He wants to move on to something else. It's not.
Is there any evidence that the appellant was prevented from replying when the other man said he was going to pop the witness?
Your Honor, there's no requirement that he reply and say no. However, there needs to be something that shows that there is some sort of agreement. And here, when he changes the subject, he doesn't choose to outrightly say no, but he chooses to talk about something else, that this is not a line of conversation he wants to go through because it's not something he's interested in talking about. They deal with other issues at this
point. Why do you say that can't be an adoptive admission?
Because if it was adopted admission, in some way, he would have furthered that conversation.
Where's your authority for that? Isn't that your interpretation? And aren't we more interested in what the court interpreted the conversation to be?
Well, Your Honor, in a case that the Commonwealth mentions, Clarity v. Commonwealth, it states that the two parties, they need to perform different roles to complete a whole to assume the conspiracy. In this situation, with Mr. Nunnally in court, the only role he could have played is some sort of encouragement or helping him plan in some way in terms of how this action should have occurred. And he had no ability to do that. So for him to have any sort of adoptive admission, he would have had to have gone through and in some way shown what his place would be and his participation would have been in this action. But
why
he didn't.
Why do you say that? I mean, that's, other than you being the authority for that being the requirement, what is the, where do you get the authority for that assertion, that that's required in order to interpret the conversation as adopting what was suggested is needed to be done?
Your Honor, like I stated, I get that from Clarity v. Commonwealth, which deals specifically with parties have to have some sort of participation and they have to be able to participate in any way. So for him to adopt that idea, he would have had to show what his participation would have been. And he doesn't do that in any situation here. He changes the subject. He wants to talk about something else. The Commonwealth also deals with the fact that this happens when they first talk about the money, and then Mr. Dooley goes on to make the statement about planning to pop her. However, these happen with about 3.5 minutes between the two, so there's nothing to show that that conversation leads into anything that Mr. Dooley says. And these are Mr. Dooley's ideas. These are not anything that comes from Mr. Nunnally at any time. There needs to be an agreement, and the Commonwealth did not had insufficient evidence to show that there was ever an agreement, and what may be considered an agreement of giving her some money was there was no threat and there was no force that was involved there. That would have been an advantage to Ms. McDonald, and she felt comfortable enough in that situation that she chose to give them the amount of
five. It seems that your argument is an appropriate argument to make to the finder of fact as to how this series of conversations, which he's listened to, should be interpreted. But it seems that the argument that needs to be made at this point is whether the trial court interpreting as it did this series of conversations could not be done by a reasonable fact finder.
Your Honor, at this level, there needs to be something that shows that the evidence that was presented was insufficient. And what we're showing is that although the fact finder in lower court might have said that these facts themselves can lead up to an element, they didn't have that final piece of agreement that was required. So if the lower court looks at just a statement from Dooley, then we're telling this court that there needs to be something more than that. There needs to be an agreement. And that's what we're here today asking the court to find, is that there was never in any of the conversations any sort of agreement between Mr. Dooley and Mr. Nunnally, and there was never any threat that was imposed on Ms. McDonald, because the only conversation
But he's not charged with the completed offense, he's charged with conspiracy.
Yes, Your Honor, and there does not need to be an act in furtherance for conspiracy, but there still needs to be the agreement, and there is.
How about toward the end where he's upset because it doesn't sound like anybody's doing anything about getting him out, that they hadn't talked? Why doesn't that kind of bring it to a conclusion that he is agreeing and encouraging and frankly upset that doesn't seem like the people on the outside are doing anything to get him on the outside?
The statements made at the end by Mr. Dooley talk about them and what them are doing in the wrong context here. But he never says we're working on this and we're doing this together. So just because acts are being taken for the advantage of Mr. Nunnally does not mean he is a part of that conspiracy. He is a part of that agreement. Someone can do something to the benefit of someone else, but that doesn't mean that they're the person who's involved in that offense.
Is every solicitation to commit a crime by definition a conspiracy to commit a crime?
No, Your Honor. For a conspiracy, there needs to be some sort of agreement between the parties. So
if if I solicit someone to go commit a murder, haven't I agreed that the murder should be committed?
In that situation, you are soliciting the person. In no way does Mr. Nunnally solicit Mr. Dudley to take this action. This comes completely from Mr. Dudley. His comment talks about, is going to make me have to pop her. There's nothing about should we. And it's also a conditional statement at this point. He doesn't say, I'm going to do this. Her actions are going to make him have to do that.
Again, in the context, he, and I think he would agree, that he had initially indicated that he wanted Dooley to put pressure on her.
Your Honor, put pressure, but it's unclear what kind of pressure.
I understand, but you agree with that?
There was some sort of contact, talk to her in some way, yes.
All right, and then when he said later, I'm going to pop her, in terms of an adoptive admission, in the context of saying you need to put pressure on her, and the guy said, I'm going to pop her, wouldn't it be a reasonable or almost a required response to say, whoa, wait a minute, I didn't mean that at all?
No, Your Honor, because the conversation in terms of pressure had taken place between those two comments. The court is talking about two different conversations. The pressure is the first conversation that occurs on April 25th. After that, put pressure on her, whatever type that is, Mr. Dooley comes back and says she wants $500. So there's nothing to say pressure was anything else than let's offer her some money. And in that case, there was no threat and there was no force to her. He can come from one conversation to another. If the court would like to look at the situation as a whole, which it needs to take into consideration all the parts of the conversation, not just an individual pressure, and then all of a sudden we get to pop. There needs...
Ms. Rosen, if I might interrupt... you're into your rebuttal. You have 3 minutes and roughly 40 seconds. You can continue if you'd like, or you can reserve the remaining time.
Your Honor, I'd ask to reserve my remaining time.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Harris?
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Susan Harris for the Commonwealth. Speaking of the law pertaining to conspiracy, and as I've presented on brief, it's defined as an agreement between two or more persons by some concerted action to commit offense. And so defense counsel
is... Let me ask you about that. The concerted action part of that definition, doesn't that mean that each party must play a role, have an act in the conspiracy?
Well, sure, and I've further defined, a common purpose and plan may be inferred from a development and collocation of circumstances. Proof of an explicit agreement, however, is not required because of the nature of the crime. It's clandestine.
Going back to the concerted action, what action was the defendant in this case agreeing to take in the conspiracy?
Well, I would ask the court to look at it in context, which has been suggested already. There were telephone calls over 3 different days.
I understand the facts, but what was his role in the conspiracy? What action was he agreeing to take?
Well, he is in agreement with Dooley to put pressure on Miss McDonald not to come to court.
I understand that Dooley was going to do a lot of things, but I can't quite put my finger on what the defendant himself agreed to do, his role in the conspiracy was.
He's sitting in the jail, and so his any action that he might take is obviously circumscribed, but that doesn't matter. You can read between the lines what he may or may not be thinking, but obviously he and Dooley together are blaming.
Well, is Mayor
because she has not agreed to quote unquote drop the charges without being reimbursed. And Nunley makes very clear his attitude about that when he says, "I'm not paying her any $500." And he again on a three-way conversation with this Kawa person says, "Y'all continue to put the pressure on her for me, y'all." So suppose
there's a contentious divorce, and someone comes up to the husband and says, "You know what? I'm going to kill your wife." And the husband says, "Yeah, okay, fine." Is that a conspiracy?
It could be. I mean, this is a sufficiency of the evidence case.
I understand that, but there's an element of concert of action in a conspiracy.
Right.
And the law is pretty clear that mere knowledge that a crime is going to be committed and a failure to prevent it is not in and of itself a crime. There's got to be something here, I think, that a conspirator is agreeing to do, other than just say, "Yeah, whatever."
Are you worried about conflating a principal in the second degree with a conspirator or a co-conspirator? I mean, I understand there are some, similarities, but hypothetically, your case, it could be a conspiracy. It could be a principal in the second degree. You look at McGee, which is a principal in the second degree case. There was very little that the woman did to contribute to the action that her lover took in killing her husband. But still, it was sufficient to convict her of being a principal in the second degree.
Counsel, a conspiracy is not only an agreement, but is it not a direct, also requirement, a direct but ineffectual act toward the commission of the offense?
That's an attempt.
Yeah, that...
Am I wrong on that?
It's an agreement. It's an agreement between two or more persons by some concerted action to commit an offense. That's all. And well, I don't mean that's all, but that's what it is. A common purpose and plan may be inferred from a development and collocation of circumstances. This is a sufficiency of the evidence case. There were telephone calls between Dooley and Nunley, and then this third person, Kwa, over a three-day period. Dooley exhorted Nunley that he may have to do a little sit-down time, but he was going to make sure that this did not happen. And Nunley said something to the effect, "Well, I did this for KWA Kawa's black ass." So there's something there. And he said that he was not going to pay that bitch $500. Dooley says that she's going to make him have to pop her. And Nunley says he may not have said, "We'll go ahead and do it," but he does say something. He says, "That shit, man, I told motherfuckers, man, fucking with your people's man."
But
I mean,
even if he said, "Go ahead and do it," is that, and does he have a role in the conspiracy?
I think it does, and I think the case law bears me out on that. You know, people can play different roles in a conspiracy and still be just as culpable. You know, just because he's sitting in a jail cell and not able to...
I can see solicitation, I can see principal in the second degree, inciting, encouraging someone to commit a crime. But, I mean, it's been a long time since I took criminal law in law school, but I thought that conspiracy, a co-conspirator, had a role in the agreed-upon crime.
Wait a minute.
Also,
this language that doesn't reflect any facts where it's lifted from, but where it says by concerted action, there's no requirement that both parties parties to the agreement, if it's a two-party agreement, have to take some affirmative action to further the crime that they're contemplated, is it?
That's to me, that's the difference between conspiracy and principal and second degree, even if, you know, the principal and second
degree. No, but I mean, there's no requirement. Therefore, it's impossible for him to pop the girl because he's in jail. There's not that's not the concerted action we're talking about, is it?
No, sir. And also, I quoted in the brief, Charity v. Commonwealth, as often as not, conspirators play different roles in the criminal plan.
What is his role?
Has been shown that the defendants, by their acts, pursued the same object. That's what he's done. One performing one part and the others performing another part so as to complete it. A view to its attainment. The fact finder will be justified in concluding that they were engaged in a conspiracy to effect that object. And that's what the fact finder in this case did.
Ms. Harris, I misspoke earlier when I said a direct but ineffectual. That's under the definition of an attempt.
That's all right. I mean, yeah. Sorry. And then...
In the theories of that came up with conspiracy... for the crime, we had the act and the mental intent. And then the intent, the attempt is the next where you back off from having the classic requirement of the two. And isn't conspiracy one step back where you're punishing almost just the mental element? You've got to have something more than just the mental element because you can think bad thoughts.
Right.
But in
I agree
the
with that.
Concept of, I think I've heard it explained as, you know, going out in concentric circles and all like. But the classic criminal act, it requires the actus and the mental element together. But as things developed, we got a little bit past that, and we wanted to have the law step in at an earlier stage, almost at a preventive stage, so we developed the law of attempt. And then even further out, where there's less act, which allows you to be more assured of what's going on in the mind,
right.
We end up with kind of the vaguest of the offenses, which is conspiracy, where it's the crime actually is the agreement, but because you've got two agreeing, it's dangerous enough for the state to take action. Isn't that the type thing?
I do. I agree with that. And in this case, it wasn't just some offhand remark that Judge Petty was presenting about, hey, I'm going to kill your wife, and the husband says, okay. I mean, this was over 3 days. In context, it looks like Nunley is not going to be amenable to the idea of giving Miss McDonald back her money so that she will not show up in court. And the fact that she's not afraid, defense counsel made some sort of remark that, well, the fact that she's not afraid or that she feels comfortable enough to pitch this to Dooley is somehow suggests that this was not a real conspiracy. Or a threat, she didn't have a real threat of bodily harm or she never would have made this pitch. I just think that that's a non-issue. The fact that she doesn't know that they are conspiring to pop her or have pressure put on her, is beside the point. And I would just also emphasize the law of conspiracy going out further, what you said, Judge Bob Gardner, that no overt act in furtherance of the underlying crime is necessary, and that when parties agree to commit an offense, they have committed the crime of conspiracy, regardless of whether an act in furtherance of the underlying crime has been performed. And so I think, you know, again, the fact that he's sitting in the pokey is, of no matter. I would just... ask that you affirm the judgment of the court below who did find the evidence sufficient to convict.
Thank you, Ms. Harris. Ms. Rosenblatt, you have 3.5 minutes.
Thank you. Your Honors, I would just like to deal with the idea of a concerted action, which is required in any sort of agreement. Like I stated before, while Mr. Nunnally is in jail, the only action he can take is some sort of encouragement.
Give me some cases, but the facts of the case, not the verbiage where it says concerted action, but give me some cases where the issue was whether there was sufficient concerted action for there to be an agreement. And tell me what the facts of those cases were.
Let me go one step further on Judge Baumgardner's question. What is required other than an agreement to commit an offense?
The agreement needs to go together, and there needs to be a meeting of the minds, and there needs to show something that there is an agreement. An agreement
is... Assuming there's an agreement, what else is there necessary for conspiracy?
For a conspiracy, there's no act in furtherance that's required, but this case doesn't even show an agreement because Mr. Nunnally does not do anything to show that he agrees.
Let's go back to Judge Baumgardner's.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Would you please repeat your question?
I'd like a case, the facts of the case, where the issue was whether there was sufficient concerted action to establish this agreement. But the facts, not just the quote, but I want the facts on which the court would have found or differentiated where it was using, and the definitive issue was whether there was sufficient concerted action. Because I think we're talking in terms of there's some requirement of some act in furtherance, plus the fact that it must be both parties doing that. But I think you would agree with me, if the conversation had been, I want you to pop her, or I'm going to pop her, and the other guy said, yes, I want you to pop her, would that have been in a conspiracy?
No, Your Honor, not unless they do something together. He needs to show that he is going to participate in some way. The court asked for an example, and I would say that...
Aren't you telling me now that once there is an agreement, now I said the fact was... The one guy says, I'm going to have to pop her, and the defendant says, I want you to pop her. Agreed. Well, let's put the agreed word on it. And you say there still must be some furtherance of the act?
The ability for a concerted action, which is also required in any sort of conspiracy. The agreement itself is not enough. They need to...
You just told me a few minutes ago that the agreement was enough.
An agreement with the ability to do a concerted action.
But that's not what you said earlier. I asked you whether or not the agreement alone is sufficient. You said yes.
Your Honor, then I apologize. The requirement of a conspiracy is an agreement by a concerted action to commit an offense. The agreement is one element. The concerted action is a separate element. And they both need to be there in order for there to be a conspiracy.
Interesting.
Anything further?
No.
All right, we'll greet counsel. Then we'll take up Yates versus Commonwealth and the companion case, Jessica Johnson versus Commonwealth.